Hey, it's Andrew, and I want to thank all of you for listening and supporting the show. We'd love it if you'd take a moment to leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe. The link is in our show notes. In return, we'll shout you out on the podcast, and if you give us your Instagram handle, we'll link to you on our social media as a token of our gratitude. Gotta say thank you to T Smacks for the 5-star review. She or he says, love this podcast. Andrew is the type of guy you just like to be around, and he gives you that feeling when you're listening to his podcast. Always has interesting guests, and he asks good questions. Listen to this podcast. Thank you so much, T-Smacks. That is an awesome review and much appreciated.
Good morning, afternoon, and good evening to our listeners around the world. We have breaking news concerning a suspected act of compassion. We're still gathering information as it comes in, but the individual is also accused of inspiring large groups of people, being open-minded, committing acts of kindness, and displaying signs of authenticity. Stay tuned as we give you all the breaking details on your source for all the news that matters.
Yoga Talk Pod with Andrew Gordon.
Natalie Kwa, welcome. Bonjour.
Hello. Bonjour.
Ça
va? Bonjour. Hello. Hi, everyone. Oh, this is amazing to be here. Thank you, Andrew.
Oh, de rien. Je parle français aussi.
Très bien.
You didn't know that, did you?
I did not know that. Nope.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I speak Spanish, and that's like kind of like the language I had to learn because of what I did with teaching, but French I studied like for real, like 4 years high school, 4 years college. So I'm not saying I can go toe to toe with you because I know that you lived in France at different points. Yeah. But I could probably hold my own.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's one of those things like riding a bike, you know, but I think if you, for example, if I was to put you in France now for, you know, even a few months, you would just be completely fluent before you know it.
Yeah, and you know, immersion is definitely the best way to learn a language, for sure.
Yeah. Yes.
You've learned many languages because you did a lot of traveling as a child. So you have a very diverse background. Your stepfather is or was from Argentina. I don't know if they're still around. So if I say that, and
he is. He
good.
Is.
Okay. Yeah. Very good.
You have very good background researching.
oh, Natalie, we're just scratching the surface here. And your stepmother is from Portugal.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so some of the places you lived at as a child were Brazil, Venezuela, Mexico, mm-hmm. France, United States, fluent in French, Portuguese, Spanish, and English. Mm-hmm. My question is, why did your family move around so much? What business was your family in?
Well, honestly, like I know, and since we can talk on kind of this kind of terms because you are a yogi, but sure. I'll give you like the spiritual perspective and I'll give you the practical perspective. From a spiritual perspective, I feel like it's really been something that's just a karma that I have. And I'll explain that. My mom is Brazilian and she married a French man in Brazil. So I was born in Brazil, in Rio de Janeiro. And we then went to this tiny little city called Rio das Ostras, which is nearby a place called Búzios, which is pretty much considered the South America, Saint-Tropez, like in France, you know, the French Riviera and stuff. And a lot of French people were coming there just for fun, to have a cool summer and to get away. And that's how they met. My dad was working there. He's a restaurateur. So with that already, I had already this whole half European background and half South American that I had to go back and forth. And then when she and my dad separated and she met my then who became my stepdad eventually, he's from Argentina, and then that created a whole nother ball game with that. And then he works for an international company for many years called Schlumberger, and which some people might be familiar with. And
what do they do? What is it that all about?
It's an oil company. So a lot of my friends, I went to American schools or schools from England, and I'm sorry, this is a water, a boil, and a kettle.
That's okay.
Okay. Yeah. I love my tea.
We're very laid back on my show. I don't stress it. If a dog barks or someone sneezes, I don't care.
Okay, good. My dogs are out here and I'm having tea, which is the tea. We can talk about that later, but that I use for my tea ceremonies, which really puts me in this kind of immediately in the Zen and connected to spirit place.
Well, very cool. That's where I would like you to be. I feel like that. I have my little crystals here, and I've rubbed my peppermint essential oil straight from the bottle all over my neck and my face and my eyes so that they start tearing until they burn. But, you know, it wakes me up.
Yeah, so, I love that. So we're on the same page. Yeah, we all have our tools. But anyways, yeah, that's kind of why. So I'd say, you know, stepfather worked internationally. Father was also from a different country than when I was born. So with all that, I had to move a lot as a child, not per choice.
Yeah.
Per birth, I guess, in this one family particularly.
Yeah, and so you attended close to like 10 different schools as a kid.
Yeah, I think I actually, like one day I counted and I think it was actually over 10, which is crazy, you know, but, and a lot of, so the schools, it was an American, American curriculum for the most part, or in English or in England. I also went to a school for 5 years that was from England. It was called Green Gates in Mexico. but the curriculum was such that it would allow us to go to a college in a university in America or in England if we, you know, chose to continue to go into
school. I just have to, I'm sorry, like that is just a slightly racist name for a school. Like
Green Gates?
People don't understand if you don't know where the term gringo comes from.
Green Gates. Yeah, I don't know.
I guess I'm kind of asking you, if I tell you where the word gringo comes from and the school is named Green Gates, if you truly believe that I'm coming from the correct place. So gringo actually came from Americans fighting into Mexico, and they would see the Americans with green eyes and go, gringo, 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 gringo. So to hear the school is named Green Gates, and it was probably predominantly Caucasian people that went there.
It was a school from England, actually. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I'm, you know.
But maybe it wasn't that. Who knows? I mean, I don't remember because I was like super young. I was 8 until like 13. So I don't quite, you know, but I knew that they had that school in other places in the world too.
Okay. Okay. I could be way off there. Yeah. You know, don't quote, you know, don't hold me here. I just thought
you might be.
I think that it would be pretty funny, actually.
It would be really funny. It really would. A lot of the kids, I would sometimes bump into them in a different country because the parents worked in the military or they were ambassadors or they worked, with different companies. So there was sort of an international community too, which that was cool.
Yeah. So that was one of the good things. On the other hand, you had to leave all the time, which is tough to always go into a new school.
Really tough.
You had to grow up fast. So what one of the most valuable lessons you learned either the hard way or by chance during that time in your life?
Well, I think there are many, and I think much of that has become who I am today. But one thing that just came to mind, because I came from we were 4 brothers, and I mean 4 in total. Like I have had 3 brothers with me. And what I can say is that trauma affects each individual very differently. So something that could be a trauma for me might not necessarily be a trauma for somebody else. And I say this because a couple of my brothers, it was affected them deeply, the moving.
Yeah.
One of them, I don't think it affected too much. And then me, I was somewhere in the middle, you know? So you have the same situation with the same kids, and one kid, this might be completely devastating and bring it into like therapy and depression. And another child might be like completely fine with that situation. And I find that very interesting.
And it's also, like you said, something that you carry with you today as an adult. That makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, I think one thing that was really important, yoga, I like to think that it would be in my life no matter what. However, I was very fortunate to come into yoga very young, and I think that that became my anchor for everything. So I had this master tool that my brothers unfortunately didn't have, and other friends of mine who were also, you know, globe-trotting all over, didn't have, which I had my yoga.
And I'm going to get to that because you are much respect when we're going to get to the yoga part and how deeply rooted and studied you are. But I want to hold off and get to that. There's a lot that happened in your life leading up to...
A lot that happened, and I'm very happy that we're going to talk about all that. However, you know, the only reason I stated that is because maybe it wasn't like I didn't have therapy as I was a child going through all of those changes, but I had this yoga practice that really kept me grounded, you know?
Yeah, no, I definitely do know. It changed, you know.
Almost like a lifesaver in a way.
I've said it. You said it. I've heard a lot of people say it many times that yoga saved their life. And that's why it's a beautiful thing to be able to share with people, either through teaching a class or through a podcast or owning a studio. You're quoted as saying that you learn diversity from traveling all around the world, but ultimately that no matter where we're from, we're all the same. Now, I totally agree with that, except that you got to learn it while traveling. I learned from people from all over the world coming to my classroom to learn English. Either way, I do agree with that statement. So what I want to ask you is, what is or are the main thing or things that make us all the same at our core? Because I have my own beliefs, but I would love to hear someone else share theirs.
So no matter where I spoke, you know, again, I go back to, let's say, before 20 years old, right? No matter where I was in the world, what language I was speaking, or maybe even in a place that I didn't speak one of the four languages that I knew, there was always something that, to me, we were all the same. Like, we were all dealing with the same struggle. Whether, and I also had a very, I think, I mean, I'm sure some people had too, but I had a unique situation that I had friends that literally came from the slums type of places. And I had friends who literally were part of the 5% riches in the world, probably. So and I would see the same struggles or the same things that bring joy to somebody, right? And then it would be across the board. And so when you look at that person in the eye and you see that smile or the tear, they're all coming from the same place. And it doesn't matter if, you know, one person's speaking a completely different language and grew up with completely different backgrounds and another one or grew up with more or less or opposite places in the planet. I really very young age realized that we were all the same. So I would speak with somebody and have the same type of friendship, whether they were living in a slum or they were living in a, you know, millions of dollars mansion. It mattered. It had no difference to me because it was just another person.
Yeah. Like me. Exactly. That's a beautiful, well said, beautiful thing to say and to learn at such an early age. I'm in full agreement with that. And, you know, to speak to people from all edges of the world in my situation in a classroom was fascinating, as these were mostly young adults and some business people. And to really, after doing it for so many years, probably like 6 or 7, to realize that, yes, we come from some different cultural tendencies, different belief systems. Like, I'm talking about on the layers of beliefs, but at the core, we all want the same things. We all want happiness. We want love. We want, you know, I believe that everyone that I've ever spoken to believes in compassion, you know, and caring for individuals. I think at the core, no matter what religion they came from, no matter what country they came from, that everybody just wanted to connect and be peaceful. Ultimately is what I got, you know? And it's like, we want food, shelter, and to live a good life and to love. I'm being an optimist and I saw the good, but I really believe that.
No, I believe in that too. I think at the core of humanness, we are good and we have really good values and we all want exactly what you just said, Andrew. And I think that there's different things that get on people's way, you know, and then you have like shields and you can't really, you're not manifesting that in the world in a certain way. But I think that we're all very similar, that we all want love, we want health, we want happiness, you know? So yeah, that's really beautiful what you just said. And another thing too is I think it's something that really kind of opened my eyes. And even to this day, I'm very careful with generalizations because You know, because like when somebody says, oh, the French are da da da, and I go, well, wait a minute. I know a bunch of French people who are not like that. Or they'll say, oh, and certain people in Brazil, and they're like a certain type of way. And I'm like, not necessarily. I can tell you a story and it will be like the opposite of that. And there's still that person that you're thinking. So of course, like sometimes, yes, for the majority, maybe you can say some things. But there's always those except there's always people who are just, you know, not at all like that. And so you have to be even like I lived in LA for a long time. And so there's this thing too that LA, oh, it can be really, oh my God, I can't believe you live in Hollywood. Everybody's so pretentious. Yeah, some people are. But I've also seen pretentious people in the South. I've also seen pretentious people in everywhere, really.
That's right.
And, you know, I'm like, and I some of my best friends and family live there and they're very down to earth. Some of the most down to earth people I've ever come across are from Hollywood. So what does that say? You know, it's like, I don't know. It's interesting.
I think that stereotypes exist for reasons.
Yeah.
And here's my own personal view on them. Okay. And this is clearly not something that I'm saying that everyone should subscribe to. It's just how I've approached it growing up in New York and having diversity and then having a career diversity is that I can laugh at myself and the things that would be attributed to me as stereotypes. I think they're funny. I don't care. And we always grew up making fun of each other. Like, you know, growing up on Long Island, you made fun of the Jews, the Italians, the Irish, and the German. Like, whoever it was, you made fun of each other, your black friend, your Spanish friends. But that was our culture. Now, I can't say that that's the same for, like, I guess what I'm saying is when people are really uptight about joking about it, that's when there's really, in my experience, that's when there's really some real true feelings of hatred and ignorance. When you could joke around about it, it's like, that's my bro. Like, I really love this person, but we mess with each other. That's just the way we dealt with it.
Yes.
Way, you know what I mean? I can't say that's for everybody because I know everybody's different, but that's...
Well, and if you say it like, and it's kind of, oh, whatever, that's kind of, you know, jokingly, or that's kind of what it is, but you know that there's exceptions, then that's, and it's not coming from a judgmental place. And yeah, we all have somewhat like, you know, yes, traits depending where you come from. So in a way it is true, but you just say it without being judgmental, but then that if you're being using it as a judgmental tool, then no.
Yeah. Now let me contrast that and then I'll shift the focus off of me, but I'm only describing the story because it came up.
I like it.
So the first day that I literally taught at that school I was talking about, the English Center for the Adults in College Age, I had no idea what I was going to teach, like the curriculum or anything. I just got shoved into a classroom and I did not read the lesson. I walked in, I just looked at the book, and as I'm reading the word, like my jaw almost dropped. I swear, Natalie, I can't make it up. So there's a student that was named Osama in class.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of students from Saudi because after 9/11, the king had a scholarship for to have goodwill with the states, and he sent a lot of them over to learn English at our particular centers, the company I work for. So I'm reading the freaking book, and I don't know who wrote these books. Like, eventually I wrote curriculum for the company, but someone before me wrote this curriculum. I don't know if they were doing a sick joke and like, we're like, yeah, the teachers are going to really have fun with this one. But I'm reading to this like lesson and I'm like, yeah, so number two. Okay. So Osama is flying a plane and he's on his way to travel to New York. Like it was something crazy like that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, all right. Who would like to answer that? Yes. And what was your name again? Osama. Oh, hey, Osama. Okay. Like, so it's like, that was my first day. But by the time I was done, but the beautiful thing is that I can say is that within all that tension, okay, and with all that knowledge that I'm from New York and I was there during 9/11, that I had all these students from Saudi, that I developed relationships with them. And as they became higher level in their English and we were able to speak intellectually, that we would have open conversations about that day, about terrorism, about they're not terrorists and like I respect them as people and I don't look at them like that, and how they have to deal with being looked at like that when they go to the mall here in Charlotte where we were, like different places. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, these real conversations that I felt were really opening up some pathways, at least in our little bubble, which was gratifying.
That's amazing that you had that experience, and that, you know, it really goes to show you, like, you experienced firsthand how things can be completely you know, when we open ourselves, like, it's just so miraculous.
And don't you feel, Natalie, because you had so many firsthand experiences with diversity, yeah, that if more people got to experience diversity on a personal level, not through a media level or through some sort of perpetuated filter, that we would have less of these stereotypes for the bad, is what I'm saying. Like, you know, racism, ignorance, this person's a terrorist, this person is, you know, going to rob my house. If it was on a personal level, we could break down those barriers.
I think so too. I think, again, it, you know, there's that say, the eyes are the windows to the soul. Yes. If you really look at somebody's eye and you're really present, not with all of what the yogis call the citta vritti, like the monkey mind, you know, but like the million things you have to do this month or today or whatever. And you're really, a lot of times we walk around like zombies, right? But if you're really present with somebody and you really look at them in the eye, forget the color of their skin, forget, you know, everything else about their name or whatever, then you're really with that person. And then that's an experience, you know, that's when you see the soul. Like one of my teachers says, forget the story, see the soul.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I think if we could do that, it would be like, whoa, a different planet.
I'm with you. And I think that yoga, especially when we're in a proper environment, practicing, like, either whether it's in our own personal private space or it's in a studio that we love, that it provides that space for those experiences to happen where the layers can start to peel off. I think that our world is so complicated on the outside. That's where we may have the best intentions, but we have so much, we're inundated with so much stimuli all at once, you know, that it complicates things. So speaking of staring in the eyes, you were a model. Mm-hmm. And literally an elite model.
That's like a whole nother life, but it's interesting. And I'm happy to talk about it because that was a whole nother, literally, like, it just feels like a whole life, you know, that's so,
I believe it. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know,
because I also started very young. I started very young.
You did. Actually, that was my question. So you worked for bamboo models in Brazil, which was eventually bought by Elite Models, which everybody knows.
Wow. How do you know that? That's so cool.
I'm a researcher.
Yeah.
One thing I don't know is, what age did you start modeling?
Well, so my one of my cousins, who were very close, the whole family is very close in Rio. One of my cousins is a big model / actress, and even currently she still is in Brazil. She's a huge celebrity. And when we were young, we looked very similar. So she was a child model, and she was modeling when she was like, I don't know, 6-7 years old, probably even younger, around that. That's when she started. Yeah. And I was hanging out with her a lot. And in one time, I think it was just like her agent or somebody said, oh, your cousin, you guys look so alike, let's do a commercial together. And that led into us starting to do, we did a few things together. And then after that, it was this model agent that was, you know, in the child division of Bamboo.
Yeah.
He asked me to come to work for the agency. So I did. And then Bamboo got bought by Elite. And at that time, I was around probably like 14 or 15. So I automatically went over to Elite and then became the adult division. And then, you know, when I moved to Paris from Rio, we had already been moving around, but I'd always come back to Rio. And I had lived in Rio for, you know, several different parts of my childhood. And then I went to live in Paris when I was 17. And wow, I worked. Yeah. And so I worked, I needed money, and, you know, I kept working. I was already very interested in all the yoga stuff, but this was a job for me. So I went and worked in Paris for a little more. I worked in the US some, also in New York. So yeah, it's interesting. And I think even when I moved to LA, my early, like mid 20s, I still work. I had a lot of connections. So I did some extra, just for extra money. Yeah. I did some extra stuff until I was like 29 or 30.
Wow. Yeah. And yeah. So correct me if I'm wrong. Your cousin Gia?
My cousin is, her name is Lisandra. Lisandra, okay. Soto. Okay.
I was off with that guess. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I know why you are saying that name.
Okay. Because you look like this person.
Yes. When I was, when I was working for Elite and I was working for Bamboo, people thought I looked like this model called Gia Marie Karanji.
Yes.
And so I got a lot of jobs because I looked like her when I was in my teenagers. And she actually passed. And there's even a movie called Gia, which Angelina Jolie is in it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Does she play Gia?
She does.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's wild. Yeah. That's wild. So during those days, you're a kid traveling around the world and you're in the modeling world, which we don't have to be a model to know about the modeling world and how crazy it can be.
Right.
From media and hearing stories. What is just one of the craziest stories that you can recall that you would care to share or not care to share?
Yeah. No, I don't mind sharing because I feel like, we all have stories. It's just like, I could tell you guys a little bit. I was obviously working at a very young age, traveling a lot. And just in that, even when I was 15, 16, 17, going to all these model parties, so like one time Prince came to Brazil and we had a fashion show, and then we all went and our agency sent us to go hang out with Prince. And one of the girls that I was friends with, I don't even remember her name right now, but she was a huge model too. And then she started dating him, and she was about 17 or something. So it was really wild. So we would go to these parties with Prince, and then I got to meet all these different kinds of people. And of course, modeling world, it can be very crazy. People can, but not just to generalize, like people were doing drugs like all over, like also like high school and middle school. I mean, of course, I'm seeing that when I'm in New York. There's Rio de Janeiro, like you don't have to be like in the of course, I guess that can be more available in the modeling world because it's all there, not just like illegal drugs, maybe like a lot of drinking too, And the thing is, and that's why I was saying what I said even at the beginning of the podcast, I was so lucky because what always kept me really grounded was the yoga. So I had the yoga all along. I was meditating. I was chanting. I was practicing. I was reading the Bhagavad Gita. I was reading Vedanta philosophy. And even though I was in those places and had a lot of availability to go any direction really that I could have wanted, I guess like one way, and even maybe this is like kind of therapy I'm talking to you right now. One way is that I can tell you guys that I was never too interested in drugs. And I think that maybe is because I saw it so much around me and saw that the kids like quote unquote anywhere in the world like thought that was cool, and for me like Krishna was cool.
for me
my dream was to go to India and to go to ashrams and meditate and practice yoga eventually in India. And so to me, I've always been like really, and even to this day, I'm like super curious about like how aware can I be? That is a high.
I love it.
Like the high for me was like, to me, all that was like, it's always like, I don't want to say like jaded, but in a way it was a little, because I was like, this doesn't impress me and this just doesn't do it for me. But if I had meet somebody who was like, I'm really conscious and I'm practicing meditation, I'm really knowing I don't do that, I was like, wow. I was always super impressed by those beings, and those beings became my role models. So I think it's different because I don't know. There's not a lot of teenagers who maybe have, for the majority of part, that kind of reference of that, like really the Dalai Lama was like one of my idols,
No, I believe it. And I think that it probably, as you're saying that it was the glue that kept everything together for you at that time. And you actually found yoga while living in Mexico, and another big part of your life, we should just at least glance over it. You're also more a dancer. So you're heavily into ballet at the time. And
you're heavily into classic ballet and modern ballet. and even got a scholarship to come to school dancing while I was in, and lived in the United States. I came here with a dance scholarship, thank God. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to afford it. And because I was already, I entered college, I was 21. Yes. After high school, I danced professionally for a few years. I also danced for Disney, you know, yeah. So I was hired and danced for Disney right off of high school. So yeah, dance was a huge thing, which is really why also the asana part of yoga wasn't huge for me until like 1920. I started, because before that, my training, my physical training of classic ballet, modern ballet was so intense. Yeah. So I was really going into the yoga part more for the readings, the philosophy, the meditation, the pranayama, you know, the other aspects of the practice.
And you actually, so you're in the ballet, you're practicing ballet, you're in Mexico, and your best friend at the time introduces you to yoga. Tell me about your first class and like what you thought and felt before that class, and then how you felt and thought about yoga after.
Yeah, so I was very young again. I was about 9. And what?
Okay.
Crazy. I was very young. Yeah, I was very, very young.
Wow.
And what happened is that it wasn't her. It was her mother. Her mother was a devotee of Guru Mai, who was a guru, or maybe still is, for Siddha Yoga, which is a yoga school that still exists. If you've seen the movie Eat, Pray, Love, when that character goes to India and studies under that guru was, you know, inspired by Guru Mai. So my, who I called my aunt, loved her and had spent time with her, had an altar in her house, meditated every day, taught us about prasada karma, started teaching us about karma. She would light candles and incenses, and I would see pictures of all these people with the orange robes and, you know, Guru Mai. So I literally begged her to take me to the ashram. And mind you, and this goes again, which every child is different, she had 3 kids and none of them were interested, including my friend. So now me, I'm like, you know, coming from a family that my parents are Catholic and they were going to church. And so they were also not at all connected with the yoga stuff.
Right.
And I went with her to the ashram. And what I can tell you is that first time, I still remember it, that I went to the Siddha Yoga ashram, I was with her, I was about 9, 10. I felt home. I felt I was finally home.
Wow.
And it was so amazing. It was such an amazing experience. They were about to start a meditation session. I had never meditated before. And she asked me, do you want to sit in meditation? This is what we do. I said, yes. And when I did it, it felt like I had been doing that for a year, for my whole life. Like, it was just amazing.
And you were 9.
9. Then I continued to go for many years. And, you know, when we moved to Brazil, I got my mother to find out where the Siddha Yoga Center was in Brazil, because I had to continue going.
Yeah.
Studying. And then from there, joined it was like an hour and something away from my house. And the Hare Krishnas were right by my mom's place.
Oh,
so
wow.
I started going to the Hare Krishna ashram, where I learned a lot of pujas, the prayers, and they taught me the Bhagavad Gita. They taught me Arjuna and Krishna. They taught me all kinds of stuff. And that's when I became a vegetarian as well. So there was like a lot of intertwined. Yeah. But I was still, like I said, for my physical part, I was doing the dance. It wasn't until I was about 19, 20, I took an Ashtanga yoga class and I had an aha moment, because I had not realized because I was trying to figure out how can I do something with this yoga. My dream was to go to India and all that. I felt very connected to it. So I even crossed my mind. I was like, should I become a monk? You know, should I go to like somewhere and just like, I mean, for a while, I think I contemplated with that when I was, you know, 17 or something. And then, but I also wanted to teach dance and, you know, all this artistic expression with the body, which I love. And then when I did the Ashtanga class, it was like everything came together.
I got to stop for a second.
Yeah.
When I was 9 years old, I was practicing, I finally got to roll a booger in a perfect circle. So you are way more advanced than me in the evolution of your life. You traveled to India, right, with this aunt who is much different than
your mom. No, I went to India when I was like 20.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so it took a little while to get there.
Okay, but you did train with one of the people who many of us know from Ashtanga lineage, which is Sri Pratapi Joyce.
Yeah.
What was that like, training with...
So that's when I took that first class that I had that revelation, had an aha moment. I said, okay, I can do all of this, makes sense now. I can do all my physical stuff that I love. And I was still very physical and I was still a dancer at that time. I was, you know, still dancing professionally and scholarship and all that. And I can do the yoga connected to the physical aspect. So that was like, whoa, you know, it was like, oh my God, I can become a yoga teacher. That's, to me, it was just like super obvious, you know? And then my friend who, my teacher at the time, now we're very close, but my teacher at the time, Melanie Fowler, she's certified by Pratapi Joyce. And she said, hey, you know, I've been going to India forever to this guru that teaches this practice that I just taught you. And I think you should come with me. And so the next year and a half of my life, I worked really hard to save money so I could go on my trip to India with her, my first trip to India. And then after, in total, I've been there 4 times. And each time I've stayed anywhere between 2 and 3 months. So I was very lucky because when I was about 20, 21, something like that, I met Pratapi Joyce. Oh, actually had met him in the U.S. in L.A. and then went to Mysore. And then for the next, you know, 10 years was studying with him, whether he was on world tour somewhere else or going to Mysore and living there. And I just loved everything about being in Mysore. It wasn't just going to study with him, even though that was amazing, but also, you know, being in the birthplace of yoga, eating Indian food, going to other meditation centers. And I mean, it was just, it's unbelievable, you know, to me. And then everything just feels like, wow, this all makes sense.
So that was around age 20. And
yeah, like my early 20s, between like 20, 25, that I started going there. Yeah.
But there's still some things that happen in between that I'd like to talk about.
Yeah.
So you moved to Paris at age 17 to study dance. Mm-hmm. And you were living in an apartment, I think, as well, and you were dating someone, and a tragic thing happened, which
I'm totally open talking about it. It wasn't there that happened. He was actually, so my, someone who I was almost engaged to, literally we thought we were getting married and we wanted to, was one of the loves of my life. I mean, he tattooed my name on his body. I tattooed his name on mine. He unfortunately committed suicide, but he suicided when he was in his early 30s. Wow. So, you know, that it wasn't exactly in Paris, but we met in Rio. He was French. And then we reconnected. We know we went to France. He was actually went there with me. And I lived with my grandmother for a while and then moved in with him. And we lived together. And he was just an amazing, amazing human being. Also a model. And he had modeled for a lot of different famous like designers. He was just this beautiful person, like inside and out. And unfortunately, you know, had a very tragic death in a period that we were actually back speaking, because for a long time we were like back and forth, and you know, we were back in contact. And so that happened. I was one of the last people he spoke to. And I was actually, I came to the scene. You know, I was the first person to be called by his family to come over to the place where it happened. And so, I learned a lot through that experience.
I bring this up not to be someone of an interviewer who's asking you a question to bring up a touchy subject. That's not the point.
No,
I mean, my uncle, I didn't know him, but my uncle committed suicide. In fact, I'm named after him with the letter A. That's Jews, they name with the initial. So he was Albert. But so what I ask you is, because it seems to be, I don't think it's ever not been a pressing issue in society that we have suicide, but now it seems to be pushed out more that, you know, some people are committing suicide that are in the public eye more, and it's in our dialogue. Okay. So I guess what I want to ask you is, to pull value out of this for people listening is being that you were still pretty young, what is like one particular way that you can remember, if any, that helped you deal with it during that time that stands out maybe more than any other, so that anything you say could possibly help someone else who may be listening that is going through this type of experience right now?
So here's the thing. First, I'm going to say that as a spiritual teacher, I don't ever take things personally. And I don't think, like, I feel like, you know, it is my job to share in this planet through my experiences. So this experience, I'm very public about it because it has helped a lot of people around me. Yes. So I'm an energy healer as well as a yoga teacher. And what I can tell you from going through this very intense, I'm not even going to say traumatic, because in a way it really, I don't feel like it is in my life. It's just more of an intense experience. Yeah. I have helped a lot of people who are going through the situation. Like, so I have a lot of clients who, very close ones, you know, committed suicide and come to me for healing. And so I now, through this process, have been able to create a lot of opportunities for healing for people. And so even when I get somebody who's going through it, sometimes they're sent to me for it. And I say, thank you, God, for this opportunity. You know, thank you, God, for this opportunity to help me assist and be a light through my experience to somebody else who's going through something. So the first thing that I tell people is, it's never about you. Yeah. So don't take it personally. I know this is like very easier said than done, but don't take it personally. It's not about you. We all have our own demons, you know? And so it's just, the question is like, how do we handle our own demons? So they decided to do that. And that is their choice.
Exactly.
We all have a choice. Life is a gift. And each day that we live, each day that we wake up and we take that first breath, it's a gift. It's not a given. So the fact that we are here right now, it's a huge blessing.
Yes.
So what I tell people is, you know, I know it's really hard if you have somebody that's really close to you, a husband or something that went, but know that it's not you, it's not because of you, and that it was her or his choice. And ultimately, we all have a choice. So I think that there's a part of it. I can talk about, you know, prayer and healing, all kinds of different things that we can do for them and for us. But ultimately, I think the number one thing is to understand that, honor also their choice.
You know, I didn't plan for the conversation to go.
Yeah.
but I have something to share. I've never spoken about this. But I know your energy is so clear and your vibration is so high that I know it's okay to share it with you. And
thank you.
This person who is not here would be okay with me bringing it up now at this point in time. And during the first teacher training I ever led, I had this gentleman, which I'm not going to say his name because there's no point.
Yeah, you don't have it. It's unnecessary. Yeah.
But he was in my teacher training and he found yoga at my studio. And the only classes he could make were at 6 a.m. So he came before work all the time. And, you know, he was introspective and he was to himself even during training a lot, but not – there's no way anyone could have known. Like, I had no idea what was going on. Like, everything seemed okay. I mean, we just talked. You know, up until the point where the final weekend of teacher training, and we did ours on a Friday night, 6 to 9, Saturday and Sunday all day, right? Well, we had graduation, and I get the call on that Friday morning from the person he was living with. It was a girlfriend. It wasn't a girlfriend, but a girl who he's friends with. Mm-hmm. Said, and I never spoken to her, but I knew about her. And she said, I have to tell you something. I'm so-and-so, and this person killed himself. And I just sat on the phone for like it felt like 8 hours. It was probably like 5 minutes. Maybe it was probably like 30 seconds, but it felt very long. And I couldn't speak. And I just said, you know, are you like, huh? Because I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to fast forward to having to tell the rest of the group who just went through these last 6 months in training, who grew tight with this person, and break the news to them the day before they were going to teach their graduation classes and family and friends come down, we donate the money to charity, right? I was like, how in the world do I even do this? Like, I what do I do? So we just sat everyone down and we told them, and I was leading the training really by myself, and which made it even worse or harder. And all of the things that you said are the reason that I'm bringing the story up.
Mm-hmm.
Because you brought up that sometimes people say, well, how did I not know? Why didn't I do anything? Why didn't I see it? You know, and you feel guilty. And of course, me being the leader of the training and seeing him every morning, you know, I question myself, like, did I miss something? But I know in my heart that I didn't. So let's fast forward to his father and sister, who happens to be a yoga teacher, and his two therapists, which I had no idea he was in therapy. No judgment. Who cares? Everyone goes to therapy, but I didn't even know that. I didn't know that is the point, okay? So they come in for graduation day. They fly in from California, and I have them speak before our first teacher teaches their class, right, for graduation. And the dad gets up and basically says, you know, I just want to let you know that this person, no names, mm-hmm. is left a note and wants everyone to know that he's okay now, and that he needed to do this, and that he's better now. And one thing that many of you didn't know, this is his dad speaking in front of my whole, like a group of like 40 people, you know, like I'm talking about the trainees and then their families.
Yeah.
Now, and I'm just like, you know, I had no idea this is about to come out of this guy's mouth. And he goes, so-and-so is taken hostage as a kid up in Vermont, where they're originally from, at like 13. And he had bad things done to him, you know, sexually and all that. And it affected him. And, you know, he's had struggles. And the therapists were there, and his sister spoke, and everyone was crying, and it was tough, you know? It was crazy, shocking. But I just want to say that, you know, it's something that happens. And I don't think that because I asked you for what your advice would be, and I wanted to know, because I had to go through it firsthand and kind of be the leader, right? Like, and I was going crazy. I was like, oh my God, how do I stand up and talk to people? What do I need to do? But really, honestly, you can't blame yourself, okay? And if someone wants to go, please, and I just say this, I say this from a place of compassion, that I did not know how much suffering this person was going through, and I did not know about some of the past history that his father revealed. But if there were some inner demons that could not be settled in his life for him, then if he thought that he needed to do that and that that was his way of ending suffering for him, that's his choice. And I cannot really accept it. I have no choice but to accept it, but it upsets me when people want to step in and get angry at someone for doing it. And I get the initial anger of a loss, but eventually you have to let that go.
Eventually you have to make peace with it. In the beginning, it might be, you know, you have all these different things come up, and you just go through it, go through the anger, go through the emotions. But then eventually you have to make peace with it. Just like we have to make peace with death in general. And yeah, not to, you know, bring too much of the conversation, but it is an important topic. That's why even on my podcast, I did a whole episode on, you know, death, because we're all like, we all have that in common. At one point, we're all going to expire.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It just depends on, like, I think, how are we going to go? Like, I don't know. There's different ways. And I think that one thing for me is that for some reason, and, you know, I believe in God. So I always believe that there's a higher power and a higher something bigger is happening that I don't know sometimes of.
Yes.
But I came in contact with death at a very young age, you know, even like one of this guy's and I's best friend passed, and she was literally like a sister to me. And she passed when we were 17, and I was supposed to be with her that evening and wasn't. It was a car accident. And then later on when I was in college, I had another girl who was literally like my sister again, same type of thing. And again, she also went. And so, you know, there's been a different situation that I've come close, really, like, right, wow, like mortality, you know, very aware of our mortality on this planet. And I think that that's one of my drives every day.
Yeah.
That I just know that we're here for a really short time. The present moment is all we have.
Amen.
So what are you going to do?
For real.
With it? You know, like, what are you going to do with this precious life?
Thinking what you said is beautiful, is perfect. And in the face of death and in the thought of death, that we can learn to appreciate life more and we can have gratitude. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's one of the, I don't have a better word than this one, but that's one of the benefits that we could draw from you know, the conversation on death and experiencing death. Exactly.
In life, you know, life as a human being, we have stressors. It's just not going to, it's not super realistic to say, don't worry, everything's going to be okay just because you're going to die. Don't worry about anything in your life. No, it's part of this human experience. We have stressors. But what I would like to tell myself and all, everyone that's listening is, even though we have stressors, try as much as we can to be in the present moment and to know that the present moment is all we have. So live for today. Let's try. The past is the past and the future is not here yet. What your actions and what you do each and every day right now, it's what going to lay out the future for you. So the quality of mind and the quality of presence that you have in this life, it's super important. And when we take that last breath, however it is that we decide, you know, that we go, I don't know if we decide or somebody else decides, whatever, or a combination of, but however, whenever we take that last breath, we're not going to be thinking how much money I have in my bank account, or am I in debt, or what's my credit score, or what, do you know what I mean? That's not, I can guarantee almost 99%. That we're just not going to be having that thought.
If you're thinking about that on your deathbed, you're fucked up. That's all I'm saying.
If anything that you're going to be thinking about is, wow, that beautiful stroll on the beach that I had with my beloved, or that sunset, you know, or that trip to I don't know where, or my dog and I. And so those are the things that, you know, I have to remind myself every day to come back to. And that's what I also love to say, like, come back to yourself. Because it is hard in a society that we live, at least us in the West, very like rat race.
Yeah.
You know, very like achieving goal oriented. So it's definitely like a challenge for me, you know, that just like to, just because I want to be this presence, this light, but then we do live in this crazy world, you know.
I think it comes down to balance, but I also think the earlier we could realize everything you just said about being in the now and that we don't leave with any of that stuff, the better off we are. The earlier we can come to grips with that and focus on that. I actually wrote a song.
You did?
Well, I do make music, but one of my songs actually has lyrics that, like, you were basically speaking the lyrics to one of the songs I wrote. Start where you are, not where you were. The past is the past and the future isn't sure. All we got to do is just smile and live pure. When things fall apart, it will help you to endure. Like, and then it goes on and on and on.
That's so beautiful.
And yeah, I'm still white, everybody. I'm white, but I do rap. And thank you. All right, that seems like a perfect place to end part one of my talk with Natalie Pourquoi. And we will continue this nice, lovely chat with Natalie coming up on part two on Yoga Talk Pod.
Yoga Talk Pod with Andrew Gordon.
Hey, it's Andrew. And we would love if you become part of the new Yoga Talk Pod squad. Just go to Patreon, patreon.com/YogaTalkPod. 30% discount on all of our merchandise that we will have up in our shop, which is in the process of being built. We will give you, this I can guarantee, access to premium episodes every single week. So that means this week we'll do a special vlogcast for being part of the Yoga Talk Pod squad. It's our way of saying thank you by clicking on the Patreon page, which takes you to Yoga Talk Pod squad. We look forward to meeting you there.